Hi, everybody. My name is Ron. I'm a recovered alcoholic. I also have drugs in my story as well. Addict as well. They're synonymous with one another as far as I'm concerned. Thank you for asking me to speak. Phil asked me quite a few months ago. And it took me, I'll be honest with you, it took me a couple of months to make the commitment here. And I'll just give you a brief why, which gives you an idea of currently where I am in my life and with being a sober, emotionally more stable person than I was before. My son has had 6 brain surgeries in the past 2.5 years. And as a result of that, he's been very sick. And there was one point when Phil had called that I was probably going to have to rush out to Texas where he lives. Thank God that really, because having to go out there would have been a definite problem. So not going there and being here means things are okay with him. So that's huge. So as I stand here, I just tell you, just so you know where I'm coming from, that just being here today, let alone being here because Phil asked me, and I know Phil for a long time, but that piece, it means, he's getting better because I don't have to rush out there. So that's big for me. So, and, that relationship with him wasn't, he didn't always count on me to be able to do that. That's for sure. So I'll start with, we're at steps 1, 2, and 3, and I know it's beginners, but at the same time, I'm going to probably, just by virtue of the way it is, just share where I am currently and how I see things, with respect to the first 3 steps. So I just want to tell you a little bit about me. I got sober when I was 35 years old. I just celebrated my 50th birthday. Now, I have not gone out. I have had a very, tenuous early sobriety, which actually turned out to be a good thing. You never know how things are going to turn out. It's my process. It's my experience, so that's what I can share with you. But I will tell you, from the age of 35 down, there was a disease within me that was progressive, and it didn't start out with alcohol nor drugs. It started out for me, and, not being able to deal with the fact that I was always uncomfortable in my skin, but it only hit around 12, 13 years old. Now, normally, a kid, that age may grow out of that. That's what my parents had thought, that I was just difficult and I was rebellious. And I was very rebellious. But for some reason, which is obvious now, it didn't stop there. So I was still 35 years old and very rebellious, So somewhere along the line, I did not grow out of that. Nobody knew what to do with me. There was a point where I would say at about 14 years old where I started to be attracted to people who were older than me. And as a result of that, I got, exposed to things that probably 14-year-old, girls who come from, and I want to say, a decent family, I mean, we all have our issues. Everybody does, But a family who really tried to give us what we needed. I was never told I was ugly. I was never told I was an awful person unless I did, they never said I was awful. They just said that I was not, like regular people, regular girl. I forget how my mother put it. You're just different, You're not like me, But the point is that they really, really, really were good parents. Like I said, everybody has their issues. So for me, the criteria for being an alcoholic addict is not that I had this dysfunctional family. Of course I had a dysfunctional, everybody's off. But I didn't have this beating and all this stuff. That wasn't the criteria for me. So I never saw alcohol to the magnitude that maybe others did in our house. My parents drank, but they didn't drink to the point that I drank. That's for sure. My brother, who died from this disease, about 12 years ago, actually. So I never saw it around. So for me, it wasn't anything that I learned. I'm an adopted child, so it wasn't, I don't know if it was in my system, so I don't know any of that. I couldn't identify with that. So for me, the identifiers that maybe for some alcoholics would be coming in, I didn't have. The identifier for me, I will tell you, throughout those years, from 12 to 14 to 35, was this behavior that I had that I didn't know when it was enough, whether it was going out all night or whether it was, you know, attention or whether it was needing to do things perfectly. And then, of course, the drinking started, you know, heavily about the age of 15. Now, I exposed myself to older people, and so I was exposed to other things. And by the time I was 18 years old, I was married. And by the time I was 21, I was divorced with a six-month-old child. So basically, what I'm just trying to say, and this is my first step experience, you know, I'm sharing with you from this perspective. I was divorced with a six-month-old baby. I was 21 years old, and that was in my mind. Now I can do what I want to do. It was really important for me to be independent and nobody take care of me, you know, sort of in, I had this independent ideas with a dependency to my parents and anybody else that would take care of me. So I thought I was independent, but I was relying on everybody else. And I relied on everybody else to take care of me through the age of 35. And even when I got sober, I needed that. And I thank God for that. But for me, by the time I was 35 years old, I had lost that amount of years because I raised this kid never being without alcohol or some kind of substance in my system, ever, ever. And when I tried not to drink, and I tried not to, and I don't need to mention what that is, but any of those things, when I tried not to, and I'm going to tell you, this is my first step experience happened when I got into recovery, but it started right before I got into recovery, the day that this act of providence actually occurred. But I'll tell you about that in a minute. But there wasn't a time where I desperately wanted to not drink. There were so many times. I raised this kid by myself. I had, like I said, I was dependent on my parents. They had always, you know, wanted me to be okay. I never was okay. What showed up, what was alcoholism that I didn't know about, really, I made it look like it was depression. And I used, I'm going to kill myself. And I used all this downtrodden sort of mindset to get the attention from my family to help me. But you want to know the truth? It never occurred to me that alcohol or drugs were my problem. So it's not like I purposefully ever really wanted to hide the truth from them. I can honestly stand here and tell you I didn't know. I really didn't. And more importantly, I really needed to drink. Because if I didn't, closer to my early 30s. My 30th birthday was spent in New Orleans. I don't know who this person was. I still don't remember who this person was. All I know is that I had to get on a plane. I got back in the room at 7 in the morning, and my, I think it was 9 years old at the time. You do the math. I'm not going to do it. He was 9 years old, and I remember him saying to me when I walked in the room, "Where have you been?" And I couldn't even speak. I couldn't speak. But that was not enough for me to do anything about. My 9-year-old, who's in a room waiting for me to come to the hotel after I'm celebrating my 30th birthday. My parents are paying for this 30th birthday out in New Orleans. I mean, come on, I'm 30 years old. I'm a mother, you know, I'm a divorcee. There's something's off about that when I look back at it now. But I have this 9-year-old telling me this, but nothing ever gelled. It didn't gel then. It didn't gel when he was a year old and he was sitting. I left him in the house to go purchase what I needed to purchase at 3 in the morning because that feeling of terror was upon me, that moment that I just was like I could not function with or without. And if I didn't have something in my system, I was going to kill myself. I come back at maybe 3 hours later. We had a snowstorm. I got stuck in the snow. Never occurred to me. The kid is a year old. He's sleeping in the bed. He's by himself in a one-room apartment. That's where I landed. I thought I was home free. I really thought that I had a nice little place. I really was very delusional with how I was living. And, you know, I never could think past, I lived one day at a time. I lived just to be able to get through the day without wanting to die. So I did live one day at a time when I got into the rooms, but I learned something different about one day at a time as I got more into the steps. So he was scratching on the door. He was scratching on the door, crying. And I don't know if you've ever seen a kid cry the way they look like they're going to pass out. They turn blue. You ever see a kid do that? So he's crying like that. Now, this is what I recognized in my first step experience when I came in and I was in the rooms and I heard all the things about, you know, get a sponsor, the steps. I saw the steps. You know, there was a point, at one point, I would have liked to have memorized the steps, you know, because then I thought maybe I would get it, you know, if I memorized it and I could understand what you guys were saying. I mean, that was what I wanted to do, you know. But at some point, it hit me that I had no idea that that was a problem with the kids scratching. The next day that he did that, I went out and did the same thing again. So my first step experience really was more about two parts. The first part was that I could not control my alcohol consumption no matter how much I wanted to. If you turned my insides out, I'm going to tell you my experience. Turn my insides out and showed you what wanting looked like. If wanting had a color, I could tell you, show you that I really didn't want to drink on a particular day. I really didn't. I wanted to be home when the kid got home. I really wanted to be present. I really wanted able to not to have that feeling of like my body was vibrating and that I could actually sit and do homework with the kid and not feel like I was jumping out of my skin. I wanted that so bad, but that wanting was not enough for me because 1 second of that vibration in my body, one moment of that feeling of you know, my mind sort of saying I want it, but not being able to take the action and actually not go through with it, was something that when I came into the rooms of AACA, I started there. That blew me away. I had never been to an AA meeting. I didn't even know AA exists. I mean, I saw it, I guess, in movies and stuff. And when I came in here, so I didn't have any residual of anybody telling me how that was. I was desperate to the point where I was so willing. I guess I was one of those people at my, you know, maybe it was age, some of it. But really, for me, it was like Bill in a lot of ways. You know, it was really more about the depth of terror that I had within me. So, you know, on the outside, I really worked very hard to keep this sick idea about how independent and okay I was taking care of myself and my son. That meant a lot to me. That was like the story I told myself. I came in here with stories. And, you know, those stories had to start to be shifted, you know, that and start to look at the truth about those stories. So, but inside, I was eating myself up alive with fear. I was doing crimes against myself all the time. I was terrorized by my own thoughts. I was terrorized by the action I took on those thoughts, because oftentimes I couldn't control those thoughts. Those thoughts gave me what I know now is a false sense of power to actually, you know, it was a self-fulfilling prophecy, you know, deep down inside of me. And that's my first step experience, really was like it is for hopefully all of us, a two-part experience. You know, I had to put down the alcohol. And when I was asked to put down the alcohol, I was ready to do that. No, I was lucky because I didn't have people who told me, just don't drink today. Don't drink today and you'll be okay. I'm not a stupid person, and no, none of us really are. I mean, I like to be honest with the people that I'm guided to help, that's not possible for me. But I didn't know that. I didn't know that in here, but somewhere in my gut, in that process of that, you know, conceding to my innermost self, that was my experience, that inside I knew, I couldn't articulate it, but I knew that that was something I couldn't do. And if that was something I couldn't do, you know, with all the self-reliance that I was taught, very second step stuff, self-reliance that I was taught, the stuff that I hung on to, that, you know, self-sufficiency, all of those things, the way in which I could think my way through something, was all smashed at that point. And, you know, I mean, that is a line in the book, but for me it really was, you know. You know, these reservations of any idea that I could drink successfully or I could live my life successfully, that was an issue for me. You know, I mean, I knew that once the alcohol was put down, that there was something else going on, but I was so in denial and so fearful about you finding out or anybody finding out what a horrible person I thought I was. I really did. I really thought that, you know, the alcohol kept me from killing myself for a period of time. It was my solution. However, it turned on me. It no longer was. Because without it, I was miserable, and with it, I was miserable. This particular day, on a Friday, was really the first experience I had with powerlessness, with the first step, without even knowing it. Which really was the place where, you know, I became as willing as the dying could be, you know. And I'm sure I had some second step experience as well, you know. I have no doubt. Just not a formal one. As later, you know, a different kind of approach with a sponsor, and then I started to see. But I, this moment in time, and it was only a moment in time. And, you know, you're either... It's only a 24-hour period. Either you're drinking and getting high, or you're not. It's one of the two, you know. So I had doing what I normally do. I get that vibration. I get that uncomfortable feeling. I get that thought. That thought that I never knew that I couldn't stop on my own volition, you know, that I needed something greater to help me with that, because it really had nothing to do with the alcohol for me. But at that point, that's not what that was about. It is now. But that was the moment of grace. That horrible experience, as awful as it felt, was the greatest gift I got. Because I'm standing here, you know, and in, God willing, you know, in June, I'll have 15 years and I have not gone out. And I carry this with me with a lot of passion, because it really does make the difference. The first step was very important. And then that second step right from there, you know, I learned later in sobriety, without that, without the consideration that I am completely unmanageable without alcohol, which I learned that later in sobriety after 2 years. But I'm sitting in this room, I make the phone call. I had alcohol delivered to my house. I wasn't out anymore. I couldn't, you know. I also offered favors because I didn't have any money left. Never followed through on the favors. I didn't have anything left. So I'm there, the kid's about to come home from school, and I'm now getting that feeling coming, that feeling of I'm going to be okay, but I was never okay. And something came over me. Step book, they call it an act of providence, you know. Second step, it's a you know, a willingness, and sometimes can commence, you know, just the willingness commence a result of what? Well, you know, for me, the result was that I ended up making a phone call randomly to a psych place. The woman calls me back. I had a terrible attitude. She didn't talk to me the way I wanted her to talk to me. Then she had someone call me back, and this woman said, I told her the truth. First time I ever told anybody the truth in my life. I'm serious. Except for when I was giving birth. This hurts like you know what. So she was so nice. But she said to me, it sounds like you're an alcoholic. For some godly reason, the fight went out of me like you wouldn't believe. Like I said, you know, it couldn't have happened sooner or later, I suppose. It happened when it happened. That was my first experience with the first step. However, it was not my last experience with the first step, and also the second step. But that was the beginning for me. So I came into the rooms. I got busy. I did everything you guys told me to do. I was still uncomfortable, really uncomfortable. 2 years I spent like that. I had a sponsor. I loved being with you guys. I loved the fellowship. I still do. I love what goes on. I did all those things, worked steps from that time. They were taking me through step book. I didn't know, you know, I wanted to have an experience. However, every time I'd leave a meeting, I'd come home, alcohol in my system, none whatsoever. Something said to me, there's got to be some other way, because, like it talks about in the second step, solution to my problem, the way in is, because I don't know how to live. Prove to me, and I didn't know this, understand, this is just an experience first. And then the rest was added, the big book was added to my, you know, as a recipe for me to get better. But it didn't happen until after 2 years. But the solution was not something that I was really that involved with, which is, you know, I there was no power greater than myself that was even I was even involved with to help me return to sanity, to even consider that I could be returned to sanity. Nothing. I was living as a sober person, sober, not emotionally sober, as a sober person, powerless, with no power other than the self-sufficiency, the delusion, the illusion, the unmanageability, the fear of what you guys are going to think of me, the fear of what I think of me, the fear of the terrors, the eating myself up from the inside out, the marching to the meetings. The meetings were the beginning, no matter what, even during that time, were the beginning of that footing bring me to begin to consider that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. First, that I was insane. What was it to be insane for me? What did that look like? Well, I got a different sponsor. I loved the woman before, but I got a new sponsor. The way I got her was I walked up after I put myself into a mental institute. That was my first act of providence after the first one. Well, mine, not mine, but God. Act of providence was, instead of going to pick up the bottle, I went out and went to a mental institution for 7 days to take a little rest. And in that rest, I was so willing, I was as willing as the dying could be, to offer myself to that which I knew nothing about. We agnostics, that which is not that which is not knowable. And that was okay for me. I was at the point where I didn't need to know. I just wanted to not feel the way I was feeling and be sober, because I knew enough to know in a matter of time that I was going to be back out there. And that was not an option. I get what it talks about in the third step, that this will kill me. And it's not going to be the others, and it's not going to be the situations. It's going to be me. I am grateful for the experience of that. So when I did get this new sponsor, we sat down, and very, very didactic approach. We sat down, and she read, and I read, and we went through each piece. And one of the parts in the second step that is so important to me, which I share with other people, is the big question, the $100,000, $600,000 question, is, what time did you want me to? No, I'm serious. I don't. Okay, the $600,000 question, where and how are we to find the power greater than ourselves which will solve our... At that point, like I said before, the problem I realized was that I didn't know how to live. Not that I was going to figure out how to not drink. And the way it was brought to me still resonates with me. And I was a spiritual person, I just didn't know it. I was a person who had another voice inside of me and didn't know it. And that voice was not my sick voice. But I didn't know it, because I never was sober any amount of time to be able to hear it clearly or have any practice that was, you know, over any period of time to be able to discern what that was. And it scared the living daylights out of me anyway, so I just drank over it. That little voice that says, don't drink, you know, shut up, you know. I know you know that voice. So... Where and how? I'm like, okay, what's the answer to the question? Well, it was really simple in the big book, because right on, and I know this like the back of my hand, not because I memorize pages, but because I know it in here, page 55, it's so clear. He said it? Very clear. Fundamentally, deep down inside of every man, woman, and child is the idea of God. My sponsor said to me, is that aware or how? I said, that's aware. And we went through that, and we brought it, she brought it home, and then he brought it home, because I subsequently wanted a new experience later on in my current sobriety, about 9, 10, that experience with another sponsor. But that resonates. So deep down inside, it asked me to lay aside prejudice. I wanted to have a life and learn how to live. There were some really clear things I needed to do, really need to do. And I could choose not to. But was I really choosing, or was, you know, I mean, that's really was. So no matter how you looked at it, for me, I was sort of in this place where crossroad, you know, at that crossroad, like it talks about in the third step, you know, we're at that crossroad, you know, that the problem is me, and I'm going to have to make some kind of concession with myself, that I'm going to have to be open. And, you know, there are some promises in there, too, that talk about, you know, a new flow is going to come in if you even give it a try. And so I was willing to give it a try because I had been hit from both sides, with alcohol and without alcohol. And that was enough for me. And that was my experience with it. And the third step was really just an opportunity for me to take that experience and take it one step farther and get prepared to take a look at those things that blocked me, which then the fourth step, that blocked me from this power that was already there, that already started to prepare me. If I was going to lay aside prejudice, then at some point, and think honestly and speak honestly to the level that I could, right, then somewhere along the line I was ready to make a decision when I was able to say that God is either everything or he's nothing, or whatever that is supposed to be. My third step gave me an opportunity to choose. The attitude that I needed to have was, what role was I going to play in this new thing that I was going to try out, because I was as willing as the dying could be. It's really just a matter of willingness that changes everything. At least it was for me. So at that point, I chose father, child. It offers that in the... there's options there. You can do whatever you want, but I chose father, child. Because I could consciously understand... Because right now I was still dealing with conscious. I didn't know what God was yet. Consciously understand what my role was going to be, because that's the role I needed to start to play as I launched next, which we'll do next week. But that role has not, it's changed so much over the years, but it's fundamentally, it's still the same. It's just been, experience has vastly changed. But that is ultimately, for me, experience I have. I mean, I sit down with people in a tame way, they go out and have an experience, come back and share that experience, and the step sort of is retro for them, you know, backwards, you know. And that's how the experience was for me. And thank you for letting me share our team.